He clung to the envelope as if to gain time. "It's from the young lady you've been writing to at Swazi Springs?" he asked at length. "It's from the young lady I've been writing to at Swazi Springs." "Well, I suppose she's gone away," continued Vizey, rebuilding his countenance rapidly. "Yes, and in a community numbering perhaps 175 souls, including the dogs and chickens, the local post office is so ignorant of her movements that my letter has to be sent to the dead letter office." Vizey meditated on this. Then he laughed in turn. "After all, the same thing happened to me, with Hester Macklin, I mean," he recalled sheepishly. "Just so," said Benton, bringing down his clenched fist on the table. "Just so," he repeated in italics. He caught his secretary's glance and held it with his own for a moment. Then he dropped it as, in pity, one releases something scared and squirming. "The very day my letter was returned from Swazi Springs, she wrote me this from there," he said, holding up the last Florida missive. "Ha! That's funny," said Vizey, with a damp forehead. "Yes, it's funny. It's funny," said Benton. He leaned back, his hands in his pockets, staring up at the ceiling and noticing a crack in the cornice. Vizey, at the corner of the writing table, waited. "Shall I get to work?" he began, after a silence measurable by minutes. Benton's gaze descended from the cornice. "I've got your seat, haven't I?" he said, rising and moving away from the table. Vizey, with a quick gleam of relief, slipped into the vacant chair and began to stir about vaguely among the papers. "How's your father?" Benton asked from the hearth. "Oh, better. Better, thank you. He'll pull out of it." "But you had a sharp scare for a day or two." "Yes, it was touch and go when I got there." Another pause, while Vizey began to classify the letters. "And I suppose," Benton continued in a steady tone, "your anxiety made you forget your usual precautions, whatever they were, about this Florida correspondence. And before you'd had time to prevent it, the Swazi post office blundered." Vizey lifted his head with a quick movement. "What do you mean?" he asked, pushing his chair back. "I mean that you saw I couldn't live without flattery, and that you've been ladling it out to me to earn your keep." Vizey sat motionless and shrunken, digging the blotting pad with his pen. "What on earth are you driving at?" he repeated. "Though why the deuce," Benton continued in the same steady tone, "you should need to do this kind of work when you've got such faculties at your service. Those letters were magnificent, my dear fellow. Why in the world don't you write novels instead of writing to other people about them?" Vizey straightened himself with an effort. "What are you talking about, Benton? Why the devil do you think I wrote those letters?" Benton held back his answer with a brooding face. "Because I wrote Hester Macklin's to myself." Vizey sat stock still, without the least outcry of wonder. "Well," he finally said in a low tone. "And because you found me out, you see, you can't even feign surprise. Because you saw through it at a glance, knew at once that the letters were faked, and when you'd foolishly put me on my guard by pointing out to me that they were a clumsy forgery, and had then suddenly guessed that I was the forger, you drew the natural inference that I had to have popular approval, or at least had to make you think I had it. You saw that, to me, the worst thing about the failure of the book was having you know it was a failure. And so you applied your superior, your immeasurably superior abilities to carry on the humbug, and deceiving me as I'd try to deceive you. And you did it so successfully that I don't see why the devil you haven't made your fortune writing novels. Vizy remained silent, his head slightly bent under the mounting tide of Benton's denunciation. The way you differentiated your people, characterized them, avoided my stupid mistake of making the women's letters too short and logical, of letting my different correspondents use the same expressions, the amount of ingenuity and art you wasted on it. I swear, Vizy, I'm sorry that damned post office went back on you, Benton went on, piling up the waves of his irony. But at this height, they suddenly paused, drew back on themselves, and began to recede before the spectacle of Vizy's pale distress. Something warm and emotional in Benton's nature, a lurking kindliness, perhaps, for anyone who tried to soothe and smooth his writhing ego, softened his eye as it rested on the drooping figure of his secretary. Look here, Vizy. I'm not sorry. Not altogether sorry this has happened. He moved slowly across the room and laid a friendly palm on Vizy's shoulder. In a queer, illogical way, it evens up things, as it were. I did you a shabby turn once, years ago. Oh, out of sheer carelessness, of course. About that novel of yours I promised to give to Apthorne. If I had given it, it might not have made any difference. I'm not sure it wasn't too good for success. But anyhow, I dare say you thought my personal influence might have helped you. Might at least have got you a quicker hearing. Perhaps you thought it was because the thing was so good that I kept it back, that I felt some nasty jealousy of your superiority. I swear to you, it wasn't that. I clean forgot it. And one day, when I came home, it was gone. You'd sent and taken it. And I've always thought since, you might have owed me a grudge, and not unjustly. So this business of the letters, the sympathy you've shown, for I suppose it is sympathy. Vizy startled and checked him by a queer, crackling laugh. It's not sympathy, broke in Benton, the moisture drying out of his voice. He withdrew his hand from Vizy's shoulder. What is it, then? The joy of uncovering my nakedness? An eye for an eye? Is it that? Vizy rose from his seat, and with a mechanical gesture, swept into a heap all the letters he had sorted. I'm stone broke and wanted to keep my job. That's what it is, he said wearily.